You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Very good Tuesday morning to you. If you're back to work for the first day, welcome back. Got a couple of, right off the bat, got a couple of Village Idiot awards I want to give out. One to the President of France. Dude, you're an idiot. Now, welcome to the house. It's my house. Anyway, so he gets one award. Village Idiot. He is the global Village Idiot today. The domestic Village Idiot today is Jerry Brown, governor of the state of California. Governor Moonbeam, as he used to be known, blaming global warming for the fires in California and the destruction of those fires in California. History will judge him harshly on the policies of the state relative to fires, fire breaks, setbacks, zoning, putting communities in the middle of so people can live in these tranquil places, and disregarding the warnings of people that said, hey, this is going to happen, you can't get to them. Hey, if you don't increase the setback, if you don't allow them to clear land around their communities, this is going to happen every year that there's not a fire, more fuel accumulates, and when it goes, if it goes, it's going to be awful. And now the bill comes due. Let me read you. Oh, I don't know if I have them. Last night I had a little conversation with a friend of mine who's in law enforcement. And they went ahead and his jurisdiction is working up in Northern California in the vicinity of Paradise. But because it is Snapchat, it won't be around. I will say this. The gist of the conversation was, you should see this. Unbelievable. And the death toll is going to go up. And I don't mean up by a little bit. I mean up by a lot. So, again, state of California, like, there's been fires throughout California's history. What has changed in the last, I would tell you, particularly in the last 20-something years, is you have more and more affluent people that are seeking to get away. And if you see some of the names that are prominent in who's lost, it's not poor people. The poor people in Los Angeles, surrounded by concrete, man, they're safe. The people building houses out in the middle of fire country, and, I mean, at some point, planning and zoning commissions have to be held accountable. And the other culprit in all of this is Pacific Gas and Electric, whose power lines, they believe, started the fire. But for the governor of the state of California to play the global warming card, come on, man. Stop with that. Okay? The Earth's temperature, let's just say, if you don't believe it, the Earth's temperature fluctuates. Okay? If you do believe it, the Earth's temperature is fluctuating by man's hands. Okay? Now, either way, what difference does it make why it's fluctuating? Your responsibility as the governor of the state is to make sure that communities are protected and that the laws are in place for communities to do what they need to do to protect themselves, right? And that means to clear Mother Nature away from the places they live so that these things can't happen. So, anyway, my conversation with my law enforcement friend was pretty illuminating. He said, man, you should see it. He said, you know, but this has been going on forever in this state. It happens. When there's fuel, it goes. So, it's horrible. And again, he said, I think the death toll is what, 200, is it 200 yet? Or is it 50-something? He said it's going to go up by multiples when this is all said and done. So, anyway, good morning to you. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. I'll tell you what we're going to do today. We are going to, I'm going to replay an interview from that I did on Friday. And now I know a lot of people had Friday off. A lot of people had Friday and Monday off. Some people had Monday off. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. And so what I want to do is I'm going to introduce the Morgans to you that I met up in Mankato. And I want you to listen, and I want you to consider what they say. Because in my opinion, and I keep having this conversation, had it with Alex Hollings yesterday, are these experiences atypical from what you know of your friends and the Veterans Administration? So, we'll listen to that interview today, and then I think the gunner's going to join us. So, good morning to you. I also want to talk about Custer at the Little Bighorn, but I might. We talked about it, Mike and I talked about it a couple weeks ago, and a smart guy sent me an email saying, hey, read this, and it details Custer's decision-making, okay? When you're out there, when you go to the battlefield, And I need to get my map out, which I have here, because I started, I read what he sent me, because he's a smart guy. And then I started watching some things. So tomorrow, I kind of want to go through the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Yeah, I'll play. We'll do a study of the battle, the battlefield study of the Battle of Little Bighorn, and I'll play some audio from National Park Service does a tour up there. The battlefield's big, right? They're mobile operations, they're cavalry operations, right? And they take place over a pretty large area. My criticism of Custer is he has plenty of indications that it's not going right. And whether it's his arrogance, because like I said, in the Civil War, I don't think there's anybody that fights in more battles than Custer does. And he's that guy. Mike and I were talking. He's that guy that everybody gets whacked around him, and he's looking like, where'd everybody go? And he doesn't get a scratch. And I said, I've read about him. Cavalry operations for me were interesting because I was we don't say it in the Marine Corps because we don't have cavalry, but light armored reconnaissance is essentially cavalry operations. All right? The Army would call it cab. You would wear a Stetson and spurs to dress events if you were in the Army, but we don't have that, so we don't call it that. But those kind of operations merit your study if you're going to lead them. And I had a tour as an LAR guy because I thought it would help me stay in the Marine Corps as a lieutenant. I went back there as a company commander. In the meantime, I read. I read about Buford up at Gettysburg. I read about Jeb Stuart. I read about Nathan Bedford Forrest. Forrest may be the most interesting cavalry guy in the Civil War because if you've ever heard the term first with the most, or is he, I believe he's actually quoted as saying, firstus with the mostus. Right? At least it's attributed to him. He may not have ever said that. But he used speed and his opponent's uncertainty as weapons in the Civil War like nobody did in the Civil War. It's really, I mean, the number of fights that he's in, the number of people that he kills in close combat, which... as a leader, he probably shouldn't be doing that, is astounding. So I read a lot about cavalry operations. So going up to Gettysburg, my criticism of Custer, when you're on the battlefield, it's expansive. And it is, he gets conflicting reports from his scouts, right? And, but he's got this thing, he doesn't, his command style, I mean, he goes. And it always turns out good. Or at least he survives it. It always turns out good. And so on this day, his luck that has got him through so many literally runs out for he and a portion of his command. All of 7th Cavalry doesn't get whacked that day. But a fair amount does. He is part of 211 soldiers or cavalrymen that are killed in one part of the battlefield. But my criticism of Custer is that there's all kinds of indicators that this is not what he thinks, and it starts with his Crow scouts who are disagreeing over this. And so I'll play you the audio, which is interesting, from both sides tomorrow, and I'll put some maps up and you can take a look at it. But it's a very, very, in my opinion, it's something I used to, for whatever reason, I was enamored with Custer as a kid. Back in the day, there was no internet. My internet was the encyclopedia that we had in our house. And I wore out the section on Custer. I used to read about the Titanic in that encyclopedia. And that was the internet for me, the encyclopedia, as it was for everybody. And then the library was also our internet. And so I would get books on the Battle of Little Bighorn. I listen to this. I would play cavalry on my bike. I got this wooden pole that I found in a field. It was just like a long dowel, right, that some construction guy had thrown out. I find it. I bring it home. Corporal Punishment Kathleen says, what is that? I said, it's going to be the staff for my cavalry guide on. She said, what? Yeah, I'm like 9 years old or 8 years old doing this shit. And so she says, what is that, Michael? I said, it's a little flag that, oh, she said, okay, I know what that is. And so then I said, do you have a sheet that I could use to make a flag? And she said, yes. So we had this thing in the garage called the cinnamon barrel. And I don't know why it was called the cinnamon barrel, but it was. I don't know if it ever had cinnamon in it, but it was like a 55-gallon drum. But the sides were, the top and the bottom were metal. The sides were, you know, very thick cardboard, hard cardboard, you know, maybe like quarter-inch cardboard. And, you know, so it was just a tall cylinder. And my dad used to throw his, like, Army field jacket, maybe not that, that used to hang in his closet, but some of his Army stuff he threw in there. There'd be blankets in there. So she fished in there and got me a sheet that she had thrown away, but kept around just in case we needed it. And that's why it was in the cinnamon barrel. So she pulled it out, and I cut it out, and I made a guide on, right, with the V cut into it. And I think it was, I made it as an American flag, right? And I'd get on my bike, and I'd ride around with that stupid thing, and I'd play Custer. And so, anyway, so I've always been interested. But yeah, one of the things in cavalry and mobile operations, because before the age of GPS and before the age of drones, you are going to fight on battlefield that you can't see right now. Okay, because you're going to move, and then you're going to attack, and hopefully your scouts have seen it. You know, sometimes not. So anyway, so you have to have, it's not as set piece as conventional infantry operations are. So you have to have a little bit more fluid mindset. What happens at the Battle of Little Bighorn is he gets conflicting reports for his scouts. Then he decides on a scheme of maneuver. And he sends his subordinate battalions under the commands of, like, Captain Reno, Captain Benteen, and one other guy. And he sends them, you know, on their way. And so he, as he does it, and he lets off. To me, when you do that, and again, I'm not Custer, right? When you do that, you have to have in your mind, my estimate of the situation is pretty squishy right now, right? I'm not sure that that's where they're at. And I've got reports that there's a lot of warriors down there. And then I've got other reports that said, yeah, we're not sure. So with that in mind, as you go, you're looking for indicators. Now, this is me teaching my decision-making class. You're looking for indicators that contradict your assumption that led to that source, that led to that scheme of maneuver. And when you start seeing yellow flags go up, what do? In mobile operations, right? You tell the buglers, sound retreat. And you go recock this thing. Right? You go recock this thing, you scout it out, you refine the scheme of maneuver, then you take it off. He doesn't do that. Now, again, you could, if you watch him fight in the Civil War and you hear the stories of what happened to him, how he led in the Civil War, how he leads at Little Bighorn is consistent with how he led in the Civil War, which is put his ears back and go. And so anyway, we'll probably take that on tomorrow, but I enjoy that battle, and that battlefield, obviously not touched. It's out of the way. So it's beautiful rolling country, the Little Bighorn is, And the thing is, he had plenty of time, right? He had plenty of time to turn around and recock it, but he chooses not to. So anyway, all right. Wanted to get Macron. Where do I start? I'll get to Macron later. The president got the flamethrower out on him this morning, and he deserves every bit of it. Here's just a quick thought. He made a comment that Europe needs his own army. Germany's going to supply it? They wouldn't even meet their goddamn NATO commitments. What? France is going to supply it? Right? And then the president rightly points out, look, World War I, non-continental troops came and tilted the battlefield for the Allies. Non-continental British troops and American troops, as well as other nations that sent troops. World War II, the French got rolled in how many weeks? And non-continental troops, once again, save France. So Macron, but again, history aside, we need our own army. Hey, that would be awesome. Stand up a formidable army, right? And we'll tweak the NATO arrangement, and we can remove ourselves from the continent. That would be, yeah, as long as you have a credible army. Who's going to supply the troops? The Germans? They don't supply their own right now. Are you going to triple the size of your army? You going to triple the size of your air force? We won't even tag you with the Navy, okay? Because you don't even have one. Are you going to do that? I mean, it's a joke when you pull it apart. And he uses the 100th commemoration of the armistice to roll this bullshit out. So, I mean, a lot of people say, oh, the president, you know, he's this and he's that. You know what? The president, in my opinion, has every right to get the blowtorch out on Macron. Because he's the village idiot. All right, with all that said, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps band makes it official. Welcome to All Marine Radio. I got an email from the Ukraine a little bit ago. Yeah, check this out. It's from Miroslav. Hello. I and my friends really like your radio. We listen with great pleasure. Thank you for your good and quality programs. Keep up the great work. I want to receive a gift from you. Souvenirs on memory. Good luck and prosperity. Your fan. My address. He lives in the Ukraine. In a town called Ivano Frankishkova, something like that. Yeah, so, Miroslav, if you're listening out there, good morning to you. Good luck in the Ukraine, all right? Don't be afraid of those Russians, man. Whoop it on their ass. You have it. All right, so, now maybe that's just Miroslav, like, want me to email him back and then steal my identity and empty my bank account. I'm not saying that that's not possible, but I never think that the first time. So, good morning to you. Good morning to Miroslav. Actually, good evening to Miroslav. And the United States Marine Corps Band does make this official. Good morning to you. dedicated to Mike, who sent me the email about Custer. He's a smart guy. I've never met him. At some point our paths will cross, but I won't tell you his last name, but I've only heard great things about him, not only as a Marine, but as a guy. So this is dedicated to him, and always appreciate him listening, and I appreciate his input.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
It defines us. It defines warriors like Gunnery Sergeant John Canley, a leader who led from the front. With his Marines outnumbered, he pushed forward during the Battle of Way City, standing tall during firefights and throwing himself into harm's way to keep his fellow Marines safe.
The only thing I was doing was just responding. The Marines, the young Marines, it shows them that it's not do as I say, it's do as I do. And just being that close with them brings motivation to them.
During firefights, when we'd be all hugging Mother Earth, he'd be standing up directing us. And I think if you talk to every Alpha Company Marine, we're amazed that he was never shot.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful, and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time to check the weather around Marineland. So we'll do that. I've got an interesting email about Macron. I'll read it to you real quick. Can I double down on your Macron hate this morning? I don't hate the guy. I'm just saying he's the village idiot this morning. Look, I can think of people to call out. But what's the point of calling Trump out on the 100th commemoration and to promote your globalism agenda when Angela Merkel is on her way of out of office? You don't have anybody else, right? You don't have anybody else in the room. Oh, my God. Email. What's the point? 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 She is getting booted out of office. And you're going to incite Donald Trump? Clearly, he didn't think this through. Clearly, he didn't think this through. Here's one on Jerry Brown. I saw the video of Governor Brown blaming the fires in California on global warming. Absolutely incredible. I don't live in the state anymore. I grew up there. Fire's been rolling around that state. Californians looking for either beautiful places to live if you're wealthy or trying to build something on the cheap have encroached on Ma Nature. When that bitch breaks it off in your ass, this is the kind of shit that happens. And Mac, you are right. The setbacks, planning and zoning issues are all part of this. California is going to have to rethink how it plops these communities down in the middle of nowhere. And by nowhere, I mean fire country. Heartbreaking to watch. Two solid nominees for village idiots this morning. Maybe we can get them in the town square and let them fight it out to see who the winner is. I don't know that either one would participate in that kind of event. All right, currently cloudy in 47 in Quantico, Virginia. It is cloudy in 69 at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It is cloudy in 31 in Granbury, Texas, so cold in Texas. Sunny in 43 in 29 Palms, cold in 29 Palms. Camp Pendleton is partly sunny in 58, so pretty normal there. Okinawa, dark cloudy in 70, cooled off there. In the Helmand province of, in the Al-Anbar province of Iraq, in Ramadi, it is clear, dark in 66. In the Helmand province of Afghanistan, where Task Force Southwest works, clear, dark in 58. And in the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is cloudy, 59 degrees, looking for a high of 79 today with winds gusting up to 40 miles an hour, steady at between 15 and 25 miles an hour. And temperatures will stay steady, but the wind will drop off tomorrow. And much needed. When I flew in from Minnesota on Sunday, you could see in Nevada, you could see the smoke. That's how large these fires are. But again, California's got some work to do. Regardless of global warming or whatever political point you want to make, California has an issue with communities and fires and setbacks that it's got to address. And you cannot plop these communities down in the middle of nowhere, right? Windy roads to get through and have dry fuel leading straight up to the home. And that's what you see. And so, let me tell you, what individual homeowners do is up to their, but in terms of planned communities that planning and zoning has a say in, then there should be, you know, pretty large setbacks so that these fires can't encroach. So, anyway, more of All Marine Radio coming up next. We'll get to some news headlines. I'll give you some Trump blowtorch. More of that coming up next on a Tuesday edition that feels like a Monday.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, this is Tim McGarry from the McGarry Mortgage Minute. Heard every Wednesday right here on All Marine Radio, where I'll answer all your mortgage questions from home buying to home financing, from VA to conventional loans to moving in. So don't miss it. The McGarry Mortgage Minute, right here on All Marine Radio, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And remember, my name is McGarry, and I'm here to help.
Find all of Tim McGarry's contact information on the Read Board page at allmarineradio.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs at allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs at allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
A message from DAV to all returning veterans. Thank you. Thank you for doing your duty. Thank you for doing our bidding. Thank you for laying it all on the line. Thank you for stepping up and not backing down. Thank you for putting your future on hold to put our enemies on notice. Thank you for putting your buddies' lives ahead of your own. Thank you for putting yourself in harm's way. Thank you for defending our freedom, for displaying your honor, for being a hero, even though you don't want to be called one. For all this and more, DAV thanks you, and we're here to help you. Expert DAV advisors will make sure you get the health, disability, and financial benefits you were promised and earned. If you're a veteran, visit DAV.org for free help. And again, thank you.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good,
but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soak in the ache of this heartbreak. I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I dream, yeah.
Here it comes.
But right now it's just me, alone on this earth. So I'm gonna sit here and watch this cigarette burn. It hurts.
It's called Hurt. It's sung by Peyton Davis. You can listen to her interview here on All Marine Radio. Go to the podcast page, type in Peyton or Davis, or Peyton Davis, and boom, it'll come right up. Old Stud Muffin with a great voice. So, yeah, you can buy that song on iTunes. I think Google Play Music. Here's another email. Macron is a village idiot. Do you think he sat around with his top advisors and said, okay, here's my speech. Trump will be in the audience. It's aimed at him. How do you think this is going to work out? Oh, my God. Right? Well, Mr. President, if I was you, I would use this occasion to do that. Maybe the day after when he goes home. Well, I think it's the appropriate time, and what I'm going to suggest is that maybe Europe should have its own army. Hello? We have no army now. We fake it. They do the whole thing. We know that. Everybody knows that. What are you talking about? Europe has its own army? I think people will use this as comedy. And I do not like that. France is not the butt of jokes. Vive la France. Oh, my God. And then Macron, well, we could build our own army. Oh, we could. It would be a tiny one. The Germans would give us, what, 10,000 troops? We would have our own? What do we have? 150,000? What do we have? And what do the Russians have? Good God, Macron. Did you get this out of the color books that you read at night? Do not mess with Trump on this issue. I beg of you. He will make us look foolish. Yeah, I would think he'd probably run it by too many people. Can you imagine sitting there listening to it? Globalism is getting booted out of Europe. Okay. So who runs our country? So other countries get a say in what we do in this whole globalized community? I think it's you. The people who elect you are not the people of the world. Okay? Free people tend to live in harmony. They tend to be able to make treaties, both economic and military, that benefit both nations. This whole globalization thing and with the Coke song and all that, I'm not sure about it. As I said yesterday, I was talking about it. It's maybe I'm just too old. Oh, Max, 60. Wah, wah, wah. You just don't get it. Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. So anyway, Macron, village idiot. Here's another one about Jerry Brown. Seriously. I'm watching the news, and they play that video, and I'm just thinking, dude, you have some serious issues in your state. And you're up there talking about global warming? The first thing is, I don't know what PG&E's rates are, but they're going up because they're going to get their ass sued off. Everything I've seen says they started this fire. I saw a woman on television last night talking about she got an email the day before the fire started, saying that they were having issues with sparking on a line that went through her land and would need access. The fire started the next day, adjacent to her property. I don't think you need to be a Mensa. Then in parentheses, I'd never really heard that word until you started using it, and I looked it up. Interesting club the Mensas are. Yeah, they are an interesting club. To figure out that PG&E is probably going to pay an awful lot of money to an awful lot of people. But the state of California obviously has problems relative to fire and fire danger. Those things need to be addressed by the state legislature and the governor. Blaming it on global warming isn't going to solve the issue. You know what? That's what makes him so stupid. You know? But you know what? That's probably easier. Okay, he's sitting in a limo with his aides. All right, governor, they're going to expect you to make some remarks here. All right, what should I say? Let's see, you're going to talk about Cal Fire and thank them, got it. First responders, thank them, yep, got it. What else am I going to say? Well, do you want to address the issue that, you know, that obviously the legislature is going to have to address, which is setbacks for communities, fire safety around power lines that aren't buried? And then his senior aide, no, don't go near that. That'll make us look bad. Okay. What do we do? Talk about global warming. There you go. Yeah, that's a nothing burger. They'll eat that up, and then we'll deflect the criticism away from what's truly substantive, and that is what we need to do to protect our communities. Yeah, that's good. Do that. Global warming. People will say we're stupid, but we're really smarter than them. Yeah, they are. All right, so we got that going for us. Let's check some news headlines. Hold on, one more email. It's about Custer. Mac, I was a Custer dork, too. I was always fascinated about him and the Battle of the Little Bighorn. I've always read about mobile operations, and cavalry operations in particular have intrigued me. I heard you say that their Stetsons and color guards are pretty cool, and the swag that cav guys have that dates back to both the Civil War, the Indian Wars on the plains, and then their service down on the border. I like that stuff. Anxious to hear what gets played tomorrow. Yeah, let me just tell you, what will play tomorrow is that right? How the hell did it get to be 7:51? Are all my clocks wrong? What the hell? Anywho, whoa. Did I lose track? Did I get knocked unconscious and wake up and I was still talking? I thought, honestly, I looked down. I said, oh, 7:31. What? All right, so let me kick this thing in the ass. In terms of news stories, all the reporters have been on a three-day weekend, so there's not a whole lot of news relative to military stuff. All right, the biggest story is the two aircraft have gone into the water in the last week. So that's the biggest news story, along with the president's dust up in France. You're thinking about it like, okay, the president's going to France. Like what could go wrong, right? Everybody's going to say good things, blah, 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 blah. Right? Oops. And then go like that. All right, so top five stories in early bird. Yeah, so not a whole lot new in terms of Marine Corps news because everybody's been on a break. Navy crew rejects from strike fighter over Philippine Sea. Cause of mechanical glitch under investigation. An F-18F Super Hornet strike fighter assigned to the aircraft carrier Ronald Reagan suffered what authorities say was a mechanical issue during routine operations on Monday over the Philippine Sea, forcing the crew to eject a search and rescue helicopter. Pronounced both aviators to be in good condition, according to the Japan-based 7th Fleet, which has had so many problems. It's ridiculous. Officials said that the carrier has resumed normal operations and the crash is under investigation. The F-18F is the two-seat variant of the Super Hornet. Aviators were assigned to the Diamondbacks of Strike Fighter Squadron 102, a Navy unit stationed at Marine Corps Air Station Iwakuni, Japan, according to Lieutenant Joe Kiley, a spokesman for the 7th Fleet. The aircraft was not recovered. The Ronald Reagan had recently wrapped up the large Keen Sword exercise with the Japan Self-Defense Forces and the Canadian Forces. Monday's mishap marks the second aviation crash involving the Ronald Reagan in less than a month. On October 18th, an MH-60 Seahawk from the Saberhawks of Helicopter Maritime Strike Squadron 77 crashed while taking off during morning operations in the Philippine Sea, causing a dozen injuries to personnel working on the carrier's flight deck. I'm like, what? A helicopter crashed on takeoff, injuring people on the flight deck? Never heard of that. Never heard of that. And then there's one other serious mishap occurred on November 2nd at Naval Air Station Cecil Field in Florida. The hangar fire suppression system activated due to an unknown cause, and doused five FA-18 Sea Hornets with a chemical, with a fire retardant chemical agent, according to the Navy Safety Center. So somebody looking for stories in a safety report after they had done the story of two mishaps aboard the Ronald Reagan. So the good news is nobody was killed in either incident. So keep our fingers crossed that everybody recovers and gets back to work and is full up around in the aftermath. Second story, Trump preparing to oust Homeland Security, according to the Washington Post. Now, this will be interesting because this was General Kelly's, you know, handpicked successor. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen may be removed by President Trump in the near future, a Washington Post story reported Monday night. The Post, citing five unnamed sources, said that Trump has been unhappy with Nielsen's performance and canceled a planned visit to U.S. armed forces at the border with Mexico. Homeland Security is responsible for protecting the country's borders and enforcing immigration law. Trump has told advisors he wants to replace Nielsen, according to the Post, and that she may leave office in the coming weeks or perhaps much sooner. So if she goes, she would be the second member of his cabinet to go after the midterms. First was, obviously, the Attorney General of the United States. So, number three, thank you for your service. What now? It's in Popular Mechanics. Startups and incubators are helping veterans survive the return to civilian life in the same way they did at war, by never leaving anyone behind. You know, this whole notion of veterans as this disabled class of people, to me, it's like the prevalent narrative. And it's, to me, it bothers me. It is warm in the We Work on Manhattan's 28th Street, in part because it is stuffed with people, and in part because it's also stuffed with boxes of pizza. Young men and women mill around with slices on paper plates, sloshing plastic cups of a delightful black IPA from the veteran-owned Black Backward Flag Brewery Company every time they slap a back or administer a fist bump. Everyone is friendlier than you'd expect at a networking event, and as diverse as a college admissions brochure. They've got better posture than a room full of chiropractors. Another thing, no name tags. There's no need. Everyone here has an automatic conversation starter. I don't know about 75% of the people in the room, but they're veterans, and I can walk up to anybody and say, "Oh, you served?" said Tori Fisher, a former Army Blackhawk crew chief and beer maker behind the tasty IPA. Fisher has piercing eyes and fantastically husky voice. I'll ask him what branch he served in. Maybe it's the same branch I did, she says. He might say he's Air Force. Then I'm going to make fun of him because that's what we do in the military. And he's going to laugh and we're going to connect. Tonight's event, called Bunker Brews, is a meetup for a rare group of veterans of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, those who return to the U.S. with ideas of their own second chapter in life. It's hosted by Bunker Labs, a four-year-old nonprofit started by Navy veteran Todd Connor that offers financial and logistical support, networking events, and informational classes for veterans who want to become entrepreneurs. He's the Bob Nielsen of Manhattan.
I think what veterans want is... can you help us? Can you help us? Can you train us? Can you make us smart on these things? We're not looking for a handout. But I'll tell you what, it just seems like the dominant narrative that gets written is the disabled, dysfunctional veteran because he went to war or she went to war. Come on, man. Joke, I think. Right. And let me tell you, and I think, but there's a certain segment of the veteran population that, you know, that will respond to that, you know? And we've got to change that narrative. Okay, you signed up, you went, all right? We're going to help you with whatever issues you have, and we're going to enable you to do great things because we expect more out of you. That's what we expect. More, not less. So, let's go. What? Yeah. That's my message anyway. More, not less. Number four in the top five today. Why victory isn't the goal in Afghanistan. Whoa. That might be actually of... That might be actually of interest. Why victory isn't the goal in Afghanistan. When Lieutenant General David Petraeus returned from an inspection tour of Afghanistan in 2005 to brief the Secretary of Defense, can't say his name, starts with a D, not going to say it, okay, he began with a simple image. Quote, the very first slide in the briefing that I gave him was, Afghanistan does not equal Iraq. And then laid out to him the areas and issues in which you could compare and contrast the two countries and the situations, Petraeus recalled in an interview this month. That comparison clearly established why, frankly, Afghanistan is a tougher nut to crack. Events have vindicated this warning. As a seemingly intractable war stretches into its 18th year, military commanders who argue that any end in sight are fine to get harder and harder to sell. Last month, speaking to a gathering of civilian journalists who specialize in covering U.S. military, Joint Chiefs Chairman General Joe Dunford conceded that progress is too strong a word to describe the movement towards a hope for reconciliation between the Taliban and the Afghan security and the Afghan government. Aside from a brief ceasefire in June, there's been no signs that the Taliban are on the ropes, and all trend lines indicate the war remains a stalemate. U.S. support has made the Afghan forces more effective than they were, but they are unable to stand up on their own. Quote, I understand those who are disheartened by this, but we never thought in the military this was going to be an easy job, said Defense Secretary Jim Mattis when asked about the lack of progress at a forum sponsored by the U.S. Institute for Peace last month. That if you listen to All Marine Radio, you would have heard. If you haven't heard that, I would recommend go to the podcast page, click, type in Mattis, hit the button that says enter on it. You'll see a whole series of podcasts because we like to cover him and because he's a smart guy. And it's if you want to get smart on issues around the world, listen to that hour at some point when you're driving around in your car. Mattis revealed that Afghan forces have been losing 15 soldiers a day on average. Just look at the casualties, over 1,000 dead in August and September, said Mattis, in making the point that the Afghan lads were on the front lines, not the 15,000 U.S. troops supporting them. The latest report from the Pentagon's internal watchdog concludes the Afghan National Defense and Security Forces, quote, made minimal or no progress in pressuring the Taliban in the most recent three-month period, and failed to gain greater control or influence over district populations and territory. So, but we've talked about this before. See if they quote General Dunford anymore. So when we use the word victory, I think we as Americans have a certain connotation in our head, right, that involves some kind of military parade and some kind of military solution. What you will hear argued by the smart people is that Afghanistan's issues are not going to be solved by the military. The military is a piece of it, and it's going to be a political settlement. And when we frame winning, it's not going to be, the parade's not going to be in the frame. When we talk about winning in Afghanistan, one is denying it as a place of, as a base of operations for our enemies, two, using it as a base for our presence in the region, without which we have none, three, continuing to support and develop the Afghan security forces while protecting our own soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marine that are there, so that it does not cost us much. And I say that and I hesitate because I just, in my mind, it's a huge flag that got put on display in Utah to commemorate the death of the mayor of, I believe the city was North Ogden, Utah, that he was mayor of. And his name escapes me. I apologize for that. So, but the bottom line when you talk about these things in the macro sense and at the strategic level is that it has to be efficient relative to human life, meaning it can't cost as many American lives. But I had that thing pop into my head. And then it also has to be efficient financially for the United States. So, and for us in Afghanistan, given the situation, that's what winning looks like. So that's what, again, that's smart guy stuff. So difficult though, I would tell you, because if you don't frame it like that, then obviously, right, people say, hey, that's bullshit. Right. So if the way you define victory involves a parade, then you got issues. Okay. And we all know what happens when you go ahead and vacate an area and leave a vacuum. We saw what happened in Iraq, Syria when we did that. Not the greatest policy move on the planet. So what are we doing? As long as we're there, right, we keep those balls in the air. So what would you call it? A term insurance policy? Yes. Yes. A term insurance policy, looking optimistically at the future, right, knowing that if we can continue to develop the Afghan security forces, again, understanding that it's a mixed bag, but if we can continue to develop that capability, that ultimately there will be a political settlement to the Afghan war, which is as good as it gets, and how it should be settled. Number five in the top five. Lame duck Congress has a national security to-do list. Number one, three items to watch. Government shutdown. President Donald Trump signed a large spending bill for most of government, including defense, in September, but Congress punted with a continuing resolution through December 7th on seven other funding bills for the Department of Homeland Security, State Department, and other federal agencies, as well as foreign aid. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Wednesday told reporters he wants to wrap up unfinished appropriations and that he didn't want to risk a government shutdown over a border wall fight. The Senate appropriations package includes blah, 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 blah. Okay, so that's one. Two is Yemen. Trump administration has decided last week to stop refueling Saudi-led coalition aircraft engaged in the Yemen civil war, but critics on Capitol Hill plan to press ahead with a broader resolution to end all support for the war. The way that came down was we told the Saudis, hey, we're not going to be doing that anymore. And then the Saudis came out and officially said that we handled this mission on our own. We no longer need your assistance. And we said, hey, that's great. That's how it played in public. Number three, Defense Department nominations. The Senate Armed Service Committee will hold a confirmation hearing on December 4 for nominees to lead U.S. Central Command and U.S. Special Operations Command. U.S. Central Command nominee, Marine Lieutenant General Kenneth McKenzie. You've seen him as a spokesman at the Pentagon. Most notably recently in the last couple months, he's the one that said, when asked about the Chinese and small islands in the Western Pacific, he said, well, look, let me be blunt with you. We have a fair amount of experience taking back islands in the Western Pacific. And they said, well, what do you mean by that? He said, nothing. I don't mean anything by it. I'm just saying that we have experience doing that. Whoa. Special Operations nominee Army Lieutenant General Richard Clark would replace Army General Raymond Thomas. He and General Bodle, who is Central Command, will retire next year. As will General Dunford. As will the Commandant of the Marine Corps. So you're going to see a big turnover in the leadership of the Department of Defense. And again, and these offices are huge. Special Operations Command, CENTCOM, you know, two of the marquee commands in COCOMs, if you will. And then the chairman, he'll retire at some point, and then the commandant retires as well. So lots of shakeups going to happen. We're going to take a break now that I've covered the top five. And when we come back, you're going to hear an interview I did last Friday. So if you weren't around and didn't hear it, pay attention. What you're going to hear is the Morgan family. They have the same last name. They have the same first name. Yeah. What? How'd you like that? You and your wife have the same name. Okay, the last name is Mahan or Mahan. Okay. And both their first names are Morgan. All right. So you're going to hear them talk about listening to the post-traumatic winning presentation. And you're going to hear their stories about their own issues relative to going to seeing therapists and things like that. And what I want you to pay attention is, and I'd be curious, if you're a veteran, their story to me is typical of what I hear. The conclusion being, the VA is not, their approach to mental health isn't working for us. Is not working for us, and it needs to be rethought. It needs to be rethought. Okay? And again, I said yesterday when Alex Hollingstein were talking, and this is why I wanted to play this again, because I had them in mind. You know, the contribution of Vietnam veterans in the aftermath of the Vietnam War were the vet centers, right? All these community-based sites that you can go be seen at those, and your record stays locally with them. It doesn't go into big VA system. So you can get seen on, quote-unquote, on the down low. You can go get the help you need on the down low. And those records never get inducted into the big VA system unless you want them to. Now, so after that, you should be able to walk in there and see another veteran. It would be nice if they were combat veterans. And the VA then begins the process of triaging you. Right? But you walk in, you're going to talk to a veteran, you know, yo, man, what's up? Come on back. You walk into the office, you see the I Love Me stuff, and you're like, yeah, I'm home. This is my tribe. It feels good. It feels comfortable. You can unburden yourself, right? They have the experiences, some of the experiences that you have. So I'm curious. Is your understanding what the reality of VA mental health different than the picture that gets painted by the people that come on to this program? And if it is, bust me off an email. I'd love to hear for it. If it's not, bust me off an email. I'd love to hear about it too. So, because if it's not, then we have work to do. We have to get involved with the VA and say, hey, your shit doesn't work for us. And you need to change it. I don't want to walk in there and see some 25-year-old dude that's never served and hear him say, yeah, you're my first combat veteran I've ever spoken to. I don't want to hear that. So, sit back, relax, don't touch that dial, more of All Marine Radio. Coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.